The wheel hubs were supposed to be for cutting through vegetation, but he was going to test them on flesh and bone. The monsters moved like a herd of wild animals, mouths chomping and angry cries splitting the air. One of the beasts had a 10-foot lead. It increased that lead, galloping straight for his bike. The front tire plowed into the monster, crushing its skull and flinging it aside. X let out a whoop as the other creatures came together in a V-formation. The wide front tire bucked the beasts that came at him headlong, and the blades cut through the others trying to attack from an angle, severing heads, hacking off feet and forearms, shredding flesh. An arm caught in the spokes, thumping halfway around before the blade sheared it in two. It was all over in seconds. X eased off the gas and looked over his shoulder at the trail of devastation he had left behind. One of the female beasts crawled across the ground using its elbows, dragging a lower half that hung on by the spinal column and a narrow strand of sinew. Leaving the carnage behind, he sped off toward the next bridge. The ITC facility was on the far side. Now all he had to do was find a way in. The wails of the dying creatures filled the intervals between thunderclaps. Cresting the next bridge, he shot a glance over his shoulder to make sure none of them were following. His eyes flitted from the corpses to the skyline, where hundreds of tiny black dots flapped to the east. Oh, shit. His heart went back to thumping like an automatic weapon, but after a few seconds of watching the beasts, he relaxed a degree. The sirens weren't flying to help their mates. They were heading toward a light on the horizon. X stopped the bike on the top of the bridge and pulled out his binos. On the shoreline, the lighthouse turret was glowing a bright red, and the light was flashing over and over. He centered the binos there for several seconds, blinking to make sure it wasn't an optical illusion caused by the lightning. It wasn't. Something or someone had activated the beacon, and the sirens were flocking like moths toward the light. Present day. Captain Leon Jordan slapped the cover of the book shut with such force, dust puffed up from the yellowed pages. He was tired of reading about lighthouses, boats, and all manner of bullshit that didn't make any difference to him 20,000 feet up in the sky. This was exactly why he had ordered the militia to raid the library. Books like the one he had just read were nothing more than legends, written to keep people believing in something that no longer existed. He flicked on his touchscreen and pulled up the audio clip his team had intercepted. Static crackled from the speakers for several minutes before a faint voice broke through. "Timothy, this is Commander Everhart reporting our coordinates." There was another flurry of static, then a broken message. "We need you. Fly Deliverance." Jordan tapped in his credentials and pulled up the Hive's confidential records. He searched for Deliverance in the database, but there were no results. He thought a moment, then typed Airship and ITC Communal 13 into the search bar, and found a record of a smaller airship that was created sometime after the Hive and stowed at the Hilltop Bastion before the bombs went off. "You son of a bitch," Jordan said, scooting up to the screen. An image of an airship filled the monitor. He clicked on the audio to play a short narration clip. "In 2051, ITC designed a faster and lighter prototype airship with thrusters and turbofans. Engineers removed the helium gas bladders to save on space and outfitted the ship with a state-of-the-art artificial intelligence system." Jordan had read about these ships before, but had believed they were all destroyed in the war that wiped out civilization. Apparently, one had survived inside the Hilltop Bastion, and the other divers were calling it Deliverance. He folded his hands, thinking of the implications. An idea formed in his mind. He stood as it began to materialize, grabbed his freshly sharpened sword, and left his office. There were so many questions that he wanted answered. First, who was this Timothy? And second, where was Deliverance now? He wasn't going to find the answers by sitting in his office. Jordan walked out onto the platform above the bridge and motioned for Ensign Ryan to join him at the top. "Follow me," Jordan said. He nodded at Hunt. "You have the bridge, Lieutenant."
"Aye, aye, sir," Hunt replied.
Ryan pushed his glasses up and followed Jordan through the hatch into the connecting corridor.
Several militia guards were standing sentry, crossbows cradled over their riot gear.
"Sir, it's not safe out here," Lore said, holding up an arm to stop him.
Jordan hadn't recognized the soldier with his helmet on.
"I thought everyone was inside their assigned shelters," Ryan said.
Lore shook his head.
"There were a few that didn't follow orders."
"That's why I have this." Jordan half unsheathed the blade. He led the ensign down the passage where they could speak in private.
"Have you been able to determine the source of Michael Everhart's transmission?" Jordan asked.
"Not yet, sir. I'm working on it, but so far haven't been able to lock on. We've been busy with so many other things that the..."
"This is your priority," Jordan interrupted. "Get it done." Jordan walked away, leaving Ryan alone in the middle of the passage. Lore and the other militia guards ran after him to catch up. The dark passage was lit by multiple emergency lights. Red swirled across the bulkheads and overheads, capturing the freshly scrubbed bare metal on each pass.
"Sergeant Jenkins, this is Jordan. Do you copy?"
"Roger, sir. Do you have any update on my... on the divers?"
"Negative, Sergeant, but I want a sit-rep from you."
There was a short pause.
"I'm currently patrolling outside the trading post to ensure that everyone is where they are supposed to be. Everything seems to be okay, sir."
"Good. I'm headed out for a walk."
"I wouldn't advise..."
Jordan stopped at a porthole and ducked down to watch the lightning blast through the clouds. The storm continued to grow, expanding toward the ship. He pushed his headset back to his lips.
"Hunt, make sure you put a safe distance between us and that storm."
"Roger, sir."
"Where are we headed, sir?" Lore asked.
Jordan ignored the soldier and kept walking. He didn't have a specific destination. He simply wanted to see what the ship looked like now that the work was done and the bulkheads were scrubbed clean of graffiti. He wandered the corridors for a half hour before stopping in the officer's wing, outside room 789. He ran his fingertip over the rough metal hatch. The stone castle he had sketched as a child was gone. He let out a sigh that was more relief than anything else. The ship was cleansed and purged of the past. They could now focus entirely on the future.
"Come on," he said to the soldiers.
They moved faster through the next corridor, Jordan's mind racing the entire time. He stopped when he saw a silhouette at the end of the passage. A moment later, another figure emerged. Two teenage kids wearing brown sweatshirts with hoods up turned in his direction. One held a paintbrush.
"Stop!" Jordan shouted.
The boy took a step backward before taking off running with the other kid. Jordan ran after them, with the two militia guards right behind. He slowed when he saw what the boys had been painting. The image of an officer in a white uniform was crudely splayed on the bulkhead. Red paint dripped from the man's neck. It was a painting of Jordan with his throat cut.
"Stop them!" he shouted.
Lore took off running, and Jordan followed a moment behind. But the kids were much faster than Jordan, and the soldiers weighed down by riot gear. They lost them around the next corner. After another few minutes of running, Jordan finally stopped, panting, outside the medical ward, and put his hands on his knees.
"Find them,"
he said between gasps for breath. He shot a sidelong glance at the medical ward entrance. Since he was here, he might as well pay a visit. He straightened his jacket and walked inside, heart pounding, not just from the stress, but because of what he was about to do. Bradley Huff, the oldest doctor on the ship, met him inside the lobby.
"Captain, are you hurt?" Huff asked.
"No, I'm here to see Katrina."
"Oh."
Huff stood there for a moment, his dew-lapped throat quivering as if he wanted to say something else, and then gestured for Jordan to follow. As they passed through the ward, Jordan avoided the gazes of the dozen or so patients dying from cancer. The beds were bolted to the deck, and straps kept the patients restrained in case of turbulence. Several nurses were walking freely through the space. They were out of all the cancer-fighting drugs from the surface and had been for months. The only thing left to treat these people were archaic forms of chemotherapy and radiation. Huff led him into a wing of isolation rooms where they kept people with contagious ailments.
"She's in there," Huff said, pointing. "I thought she would be better off with some privacy.
considering what happened.
Jordan didn't reply. He simply opened the door and walked in. There was hardly enough room inside for him to stand next to the bed. Katrina, restrained by straps, squirmed when she saw him.
"I don't want to talk to you," she growled.
Jordan watched her struggle, conflicted emotions gripping him. "I came to deliver a message," he finally said. "One I think you're going to want to hear." She stopped struggling and met his gaze, anger burning in her eyes. "Michael Everhart is still alive, and he's found a new airship." Katrina shook her head.
"You're lying."
"Why would I lie?" Jordan folded his arms across his chest. "I'm telling you this because I think I know where he's taking it." Katrina's eyes widened. "No guesses?" he asked. When she didn't reply, he continued, "He's trying to find X."
"Xavier still alive?"
Her words were just a whisper, but Jordan heard them clearly. "In a way, Django was right. A man will lead us to a new home. But not one on the ground. Deliverance will carry us into the future." Katrina fought against her restraints again.
"You're crazy, Leon. Do you realize that? You're insane. Oh, and you're also a murderer."
Jordan ran his thumb under the bottom of his nose, scratching an itch. His eyes flitted to Katrina's midsection. She followed his gaze. "I'm not the one that killed our child, Katrina," he spat, remembering the tray of food she had thrown against the wall of her cell. He was certain she had intentionally stopped eating out of spite. "You're the murderer. I'd kill you myself, but I'd rather you lie here strapped to that bed and remember what you've done for the rest of your days." He turned away from the bed, but then stopped and waved Dr. Huff inside. "If she won't eat, give her a feeding tube," Jordan said. 18. The lift door to the cargo bay creaked open, and a metal ramp extended to the ground. Michael took a sip of water from the straw inside his helmet and swirled it around his mouth. No matter what he did, he could still taste the rancid swamp water. Hopefully the pills would keep any infection at bay, but he wasn't so sure. His gut felt sour. The ramp slid out, the metal sinking with a gurgle into the muck. Michael heaved a sigh. Deliverance was docked on the same island where Timothy had dropped them off less than 24 hours ago. The graves of his family weren't far from there.
"You sure you're feeling okay?" Layla asked, stepping up to the edge of the ramp. "I'm fine. Don't worry."
Michael held his arms out to check his armor one last time.
"How's your suit?" she asked. "We got most of the dents out, and my battery seems to be fine. It's still got a 77% charge."
"You're lucky, Tin."
"I know."
He motioned for Layla to follow him down the ramp and out onto the dirt. The fresh graves were about 100 feet to the right. On the smallest mound of earth the wooden elephant Magnolia had placed there stood vigil.
"I hope Timothy doesn't lose his shit again," Layla said. "He seems okay. And he did come back for us. Saved my life. We owe him."
She didn't respond, which told Michael she either didn't want to argue or was worried about the AI overhearing them. In truth, Michael wasn't sure about him either, and he planned on keeping a close watch. Michael held his rifle scope up to his visor to study the crumbling infrastructure of the city on the hill. Between the ship and the city stood an old building with an island of concrete pumps outside the entrance. A single charred boat rested upside down in the dirt, showing off its rusted belly.
"Timothy, do you copy?" Michael said into his comlink.
"Yes, Commander. Scan the area for contacts again."
"Already done, sir. The sensors have not detected anything in the general vicinity. I will inform you if that changes."
"Thank you," Michael said.
The AI seemed back to normal, maybe even a little annoyed at the constant requests from the divers. Could a computer program get annoyed? Michael didn't understand enough about the advanced technology to know. He continued to scan the buildings, not trusting the ship's sensors. The sirens were still out there somewhere, and the poisonous vegetation was patiently waiting for them to step into its trap. This time he wasn't going to let that happen. Yes, they were back to square one, as Magnolia kept pointing out. But they all were alive, and that was what mattered. They could still fight another day and continue the search for X.
"Looks clear to me," Layla said.
Michael agreed and led the way past the old gas station. To the east, storm clouds belched lightning.
"Keep an eye on the storm too, Timothy," he said.
"Yes, Commander."
The AI definitely sounded annoyed. Michael wanted to see how Roger and Magnolia were doing on the hull repairs. Although Layla still had a limp, she was moving faster than Michael and quickly outpaced him. His skull pounded with a mean headache, and his gut roiled with every step. It took several minutes just to walk around the massive ship. Michael looked up and studied the exterior as they walked. Hundreds of portholes marked the center line of the dark gray ship. Two wings stuck out from the top of the stern, and another two jutted from the bottom. The thrusters were centered in the back, near the propeller and underneath the belly, where turbofans lined the bottom like suction cups. The landing gear was the size of a person, but it still didn't seem big enough to prop up the ship, especially on muddy terrain.
"There," Layla said, pointing up to the crest of the ship.
Two figures were working, their armor illuminated in the blue-white glow of a blowtorch. The divers were repairing the hull where lightning bolts had lashed it.
"Deliverance has one hell of a thick hide," Layla said.
"Hopefully thick enough to get us across the swamps. We should have tried that the first time."
Michael continued to replay the journey in his mind, questioning his earlier decisions. Layla must have noticed, and she put a hand on his shoulder.
"Don't beat yourself up. Timothy advised us to go in on foot."
"Yeah, but..."
Michael still felt guilty. X was out there, and every second that passed put them 1 second closer to losing him. He closed his eyes against the terrible specter of finding X dead, or crazy, which in some ways would be worse.
"He's alive, and you will find him. But will he remember you?"
Shaking his head, Michael snapped his eyes open to look at Roger and Magnolia. They were welding a panel over a damaged section of hull. Neither seemed to notice Michael and Layla watching them.
"Timothy, do you have an update on the systems?" Michael asked.
The AI replied instantly. "Life support is at 85%, sir. I've managed to get the main valves back on, and the nuclear reactor is functioning at 75%. Drain valves and liquid hydrogen fill are working, and the oxygen flow is back at optimal levels."
"That's great," Michael replied.
Magnolia and Roger were both standing now, waving at them.
"How are things going?" Roger called out.
"Listen for yourself," Michael said.
Timothy continued relaying updates over the channel.
"Distribution lines are mostly clear, but we have some blockage in compartments 13 through 16. One of you will need to open those manually."
"I can clear that valve," Layla said. "I'm the smallest of us."
Michael looked back up at Roger.
"How much longer until you guys are finished up there?"
"A few hours."
"You have 1 hour," Michael replied.
He turned to Layla.
"Let's get those valves cleared."
They walked back toward the open ramp leading to the bow, their boots sinking into the muddy terrain.
I really thought I had lost you earlier," Layla said suddenly.
"It's going to take more than that to kill me."
She stopped and grabbed his hand, stepping up close so their helmets were just inches apart.
"You're always trying to be tough like X, but you don't have to be. I miss you. I miss being with you."
Michael gripped her hands. "I know, but it's not as if we've had much time."
The excuse sounded flimsy even to him.
"I'm sorry. Come on. Maybe we can take a detour on the way to that valve."
She chuckled.
"How romantic."
Michael led her back into the ship, already imagining the two of them slipping into a cabin and feverishly removing each other's armor and suits. It might not be romantic, but he needed to touch her, to be touched. He needed the human connection. Lightning corkscrewed over the shattered city in the distance, and Michael glimpsed what looked like a statue perched on one of the rooftops.
"Timothy," he said into the mic, "do another scan."
"Yes, Commander."
A second later, the AI reported that the area was clear of contacts. Unconvinced, Michael aimed his rifle and zoomed in using his night vision optics.
"Do you see something?"
Layla said, following the angle of the barrel. The statue, or what he had thought was a statue, suddenly moved, extending long limbs and climbing down the side of a building and out of sight.
"A siren," he said, lowering his rifle.
Timothy reported the contact over the comms.
"Roger, Mags, they're out there, so stay sharp," Michael said.
"Layla, change of plans. You go fix the valve. I'll stay here and make sure those sirens don't get the drop on us."
She hesitated, her hand lingering on his arm, and then nodded. He watched her walk up the ramp. When she was gone, he sighed again and checked the magazine in his rifle. It was fully loaded. He charged the weapon by pulling back the slide to chamber around, and then set off to patrol the area for contacts. Team Phoenix had gone silent over the comms after the siren sighting. Ola hadn't reported anything since then, and the quiet was making Les crazy. He tried to stay calm, but his hands were shaking, and he was cold, which made his thin body spasm. Gritting his teeth, he held up his wrist monitor. Cords connected the device to the control panel of the steel bunker door. Ty stood a few feet behind him, pacing with his blaster leveled at the dark corridor, helmet light raking back and forth.
"Should we hail Commander Jenkins?" Ty asked.
"Not yet."
"What about Ola? You think he's okay?"
"I don't know, man," Les replied. He tried not to snap at Ty, but his nerves were getting to him, and the questions were hurting his head, both the ones Ty was asking out loud and the ones Les was asking himself. He still had no idea whether Ty was telling the truth about X. Had Captain Jordan really left the legendary diver on the surface after learning that he was still alive all those years ago, and if so, why? Ty shifted his light to the open door at the other end of the corridor. A sign marked the wall there, but Les couldn't make it out. He looked back at his monitor. 3 of the 5 numbers had solidified on the screen. Breaking the lock's code was taking far longer than he had anticipated.
"Come on, you piece of crap," he muttered.
Both his arms were shaking now, and he dropped his pistol hand to his side. The 4th number flashed on the screen. Only one more to go.
Les alternated his gaze from the screen to the hallway, where he could see the rope hanging in the elevator shaft.
"You really think X was here?"
Ty shrugged.
"Who else would these tracks be from?"
Les took a moment to think. His mind was full of burning questions.
Why the hell would Jordan leave X behind? It made no sense. He was one of the best divers in history.
"Simple," Ty replied with a snort, as if Les were a little thick for not figuring it out sooner.
"Katrina."
"Huh? What's she got to do with anything?"
"They had a thing, X and Katrina, long time ago."
Les shook his wrist, trying to keep the blood flowing.
"Why would that matter now?
You really don't know shit, do you?"
Ty turned toward Les and his helmet beam hit him in the face.
"Get that light out of my eyes."
"Sorry," Ty said.
He moved to point the light at the steel door they were trying to open.
"Jordan and Katrina got together. Thought they were keeping it a secret, but it was obvious to anyone with eyes. Especially when she got pregnant."
"No shit."
A nod from Ty.
"So when we got the SOS from Hades that proved X was alive, Jordan decided to leave him down there."
Les shook his head.
"Jordan abandoned X just to keep his woman?"
"Mostly. That and the fact X had survived so long in a place Jordan doesn't think is habitable. Reckons if it got out he was alive and had been for years, people would demand that he land the ship."
"Well, now that I've seen what's down here, I'm with Jordan. Our future is in the sky."
"Doesn't change the fact that Jordan left X down here to die," Ty said.
"That's not right. He was a hero."
Les didn't reply because he didn't know what to say. If the story was true, then Jordan was a liar and potentially a danger to everyone on the Hive. Les was a follower, not a leader, and he wasn't about to try to overthrow someone who wouldn't flinch at having him jettisoned from an airlock. He had his family to think about. The fifth number finally appeared, and the locking mechanism clicked. The heavy steel door slowly opened. Les moved out of the way and pulled the patch cords free from the control pad. He stuffed them back in his vest as he stepped back and raised his pistol. Ty kept his blaster leveled at the door. White helmet beams shot through the inky darkness, touching the edges of what looked like silos rising toward a vaulted ceiling. "Who's first?" Ty asked, clearly hoping it was not him. Les held in a breath and stepped inside, moving his light back and forth over the massive chamber. Tubes with glass covers lined the sides of the silos like perfectly shaped eggs. He angled his light at the ceiling where a crane hung on a metal track 50 feet above them.
"This ain't a supply warehouse," Ty said quietly.
He stepped up next to Les and shined his beam over a tower of capsules.
"Then what the hell is it?"
"A tomb," Ty said.
"We gotta get out of here."
"Why?" Les directed his helmet beam at Ty. The man's features were clenched, and sweat dripped down his forehead.
"This is where the sirens came from," Ty said. "I heard Jordan talking about it with Katrina. Those monsters, they evolved from genetically modified humans in places like this."
Les shifted his beam back to the towers.
"So why the hell was X here?" "Don't know, and I don't much care."
Ty was already walking away, but Les stood his ground and examined the silos. There had to be thousands of the capsules. He took a few more steps over the dusty concrete toward the silos. Dust motes floated down as his beam cut through the darkness.
Were those really people frozen inside? If so, could they be woken up?
He flinched at the crackle of static from his earpiece.
"Phoenix 2, this is Phoenix 1. Do you copy?" "Roger, this is Phoenix 2, he said. "Where are you, Phoenix 2?
Aaron's voice was low, as if she didn't want to be overheard.
"We're in some sort of cryo chamber."
"Over," Les replied, following her lead and keeping his voice low. He looked over his shoulder to see Ty standing in the open doorway waving at him to hurry up. Les shook his head, signaling for Ty to calm down.
"Get out of there and head back to the atrium," Aaron said. "We need your help loading supplies. We hit the jackpot."
Les felt the tickle of a smile.
"Looks like we're going home," he thought.
"On our way, Phoenix One," Les said. He started to back away when his light flitted over what appeared to be a broken capsule about 3 rows back and halfway up a tower. He pulled out his binoculars and focused on the tube while keeping the light angled on the silo.
"Move it, giraffe," Ty said.
"One of those is broken," he said, pointing.
"That's why we need to get the hell out of here," Ty grumbled.
"Come on, man, or I'm leaving you down here." Les tucked the binos back into his vest and turned to leave, his awe at what he was seeing finally overtaken by raw fear of what it might mean. He and Ty grabbed the doors and heaved them shut. Now they knew why X, or whoever had beaten them here, had locked the chamber. Something had awoken early from its artificial sleep. After securing the lock, Les and Ty made their way back up the stairwell. The 20 floors to the surface gave them plenty of time to talk.
"Sirens were people once, huh?" Les asked. "From what I overheard. But how did they turn into those monsters?"
Ty stopped on the next landing to catch his breath.
"It took years. All those genetic modifications did something funny to them. Or maybe it was the radiation from the bombs. Hell, maybe it was both."
Les tried to wrap his mind around that, but it was almost too much for his brain to handle. He swallowed and kept moving up the stairs. By the time they made it back up to the atrium, both divers were winded, and Les had a dozen more questions rattling around in his skull. He hurried through the space, his heartbeat ramping up from more than the exertion. Across the room, Jennifer and Aaron were stacking ITC boxes. They had already dragged the hive's supply crates inside. The front door was wide open, allowing flurries of snow to blow in.
"You guys find anything?" Aaron asked when they arrived.
"Nothing useful," Les said. "I'll tell you more later. Let's help you get these into the crates."
"There's more downstairs," Aaron said. "I want to make sure we get as much as possible. Ty, come with us. Les, you stay here and stand guard."
She started to hand him the machine gun, but held it just out of his reach.
"Just flick the safety off, aim, and shoot if you run into trouble. Simple as that, okay?"
"Yeah, okay." She raised a brow, apparently reconsidering her order.
"You're sure you can handle this?"
"Yes, I'm sure." Les holstered his pistol and grabbed the barrel stock of the gun. The weapon felt surprisingly light in his grip. He watched the other divers return to the stairwell before walking over to the open front door. A light carpet of snow had collected over the tile floor. He shut off his helmet beam and chinned on his night vision goggles.
"Phoenix 4, this is Phoenix 1," Aaron said over the open channel. "How's it looking up there?"
Les flicked the safety off before stepping out onto the landing, listening to the conversation as he scanned the street.
"All clear, Phoenix 1. The siren I saw earlier is long gone. I've got the satellite ready. Just give me the word and I'll relay a transmission."
"Roger, Phoenix 4. Contact command and give them our coordinates. Tell them we're sending up 2 full crates and we'll be coming back up in the next 30 minutes. Phoenix 1, over and out."
Les crouched down behind a low wall for cover and brought the scope of the rifle up to his visor. He zoomed in on the tower Ola had scaled but didn't see the diver. A jag of lightning streaked across the skyline like a shooting star, illuminating the area. Shadows bent beneath the cloud cover, and the bones of buildings seemed to move in the flickering light. He moved right for a better view, trying to decide whether his eyes were playing tricks on him, or there were indeed sirens hunting up there. Another fork of electricity shot over the city, backlighting the horizon enough for him to see that it was clear of sirens. He relaxed and moved across the landing to scan the street. Purple weeds grew out of the shattered road, whipping back and forth. A beetle, with antennae the size of pencils, scuttled in front of his boots and into a hole in the concrete.
"Creepy," he thought. "Wait till I tell my boy about that."
The clatter of metal and plastic came from inside the building, and Les peeked back inside. The other divers were returning with more crates, some of them marked with biohazard symbols. Aaron had explained before the dive that the supplies might not seem like much for a ship packed full of nearly 500 people, but the compressed synthetic food would feed them for months, and the cancer drugs would heal dozens of dying lower deckers. Les found himself smiling for the first time on the dive. Maybe being a diver wasn't so bad. Then again, they still had to make the return trip. And Ty's revelations about Jordan made him wonder what they would find if they did manage to get back to the ship. After loading each crate, 2 divers would carry it outside and put it down in the middle of the street, all the while keeping a close watch on the precious cargo.
"Phoenix 4, Phoenix 1, did you reach command?"
"Yes, ma'am. They're moving into position to pick us up."
"Good," Aaron replied. "Now get down here. We're preparing to deploy the crates."
Les handed the rifle back to her and unholstered his pistol. He stood sentry with Jennifer and Ty while Aaron readied the boxes. She hadn't said anything about Ty carrying a blaster, but Les had caught her looking at the weapon, so she must be okay with it.
"Make some room," Aaron said.
She bent down and typed a passcode into the control panel on the side of the first supply crate. 2 balloons popped out of the external boosters and quickly filled with gas, and the crate lifted off the ground. She punched the code into the second box and stepped back as it rose into the air, carrying the valuable supplies heavenward. Ola arrived just as the crates vanished into the cloud cover.
"You see anything on your way in?" Aaron asked.
"No, ma'am. If those things are out there, they aren't showing themselves."
Aaron pulled her binos from her vest and glassed the sky in all directions.
"Looks clear," she said. "Let's get into the air, but remember to keep your distance from each other. We don't want to get tangled."
The divers all fanned out until they were about 20 feet apart. Aaron pointed at Jennifer.
"You're first," she said. "Ready?"
Jennifer stood stock still as Aaron punched the booster over her back. The canister fired, filling the balloon with helium, and up she rose, just like the supply crates. She let out a yelp and reached for the toggles, her feet kicking at air as she lifted off the ground. "Don't fight it," Aaron said. She watched for a few seconds before moving over to Ola and Ty. She punched their boosters, and the two men followed Jennifer into the sky. Aaron stopped beside Les. "Good job today," she said. "Now get home safe."
"Thank you, ma'am. I plan to."
She punched his booster, and the canister fired. He looked up over his shoulder as the balloon rose behind him. Aaron ran to put distance between them before hitting her own booster. Within a minute, all five divers were floating toward the hive, nearly 4 miles above them. Les straightened his trajectory, then let go of the toggles and pulled out his binoculars. He wanted one last look at the remains of this metropolis, where people had once lived under the bright, beaming sun. Sunken streets, crumbling scrapers, and block after block of flattened houses filled his view. Snow covered the graves of thousands, maybe millions, who had burned up when the bombs exploded. Les held the binos on a spot of red in the white landscape. It took him a second to realize that it was their DZ. Blood marked the spot where Tom had fallen. But when Les zoomed in, he didn't see the body. After a quick scan of the area, he located an arm and a trail of red streaking away from the site. He followed the path to a crater where a frenzy of motion surrounded a pool of gore. Three sirens ripped and tore at Tom's remains.
"Contacts," he choked out. "Three, half a click from our DZ at 6 o'clock.
"They didn't see us," Aaron said. "Stay quiet and steady. We're about to hit the cloud cover. They won't follow us into it." Static broke over the channel. The electrical storm already messing with their electronics. Any minute, his night vision optics would flicker off, leaving him blind. A voice crackled through the white noise.
"Commander, I seem to be losing altitude."
It was Ty, his voice calm but shaky. Les scanned the sky. He spotted Jennifer and Ola to the west. To the east was Aaron, and about 300 feet from her was Ty. He appeared to be about 20 feet below the other divers. But how was that possible if he had been the second to take off? "Check your helium levels," Aaron replied. Ty's reply was strained.
"Must have a leak in the lines or the balloon."
Aaron muttered a curse, a rare break in her calm demeanor.
"I can hear it hissing out," Ty said, his usual drawl taking on a panicked edge.
"Listen very carefully," Aaron said. "Pull yourself up by your risers and find the leak. As soon as you find it, patch it with the kit in your vest." Ty twisted and reached up for the balloon.
"I can't reach it," he yelled.
"Hold on, I'll come to you," Aaron said. She used her toggles to direct her body toward Ty, dipping down slightly. An alien scream sounded in the distance, and Les knew exactly what had made the noise. The beasts had taken to the air.
"We got company," he stuttered.
He pulled out his pistol and thumbed back the hammer. The divers were almost to the clouds. Lightning bloomed in the west, but the flight path overhead looked clear.
"Help!" Ty yelled over the comm. "I'm falling!"
"Shh," Aaron said. "Just stay calm. I'm on my way." She sailed through the air, knees bent and hands on her toggles. A few seconds later, she reached Ty and bent down to inspect his balloon. All the while, he continued slowly sinking back to the ground. Les felt his heart jump a beat when he saw more of the sirens to the south. The beasts were flapping away from towers and climbing at an alarming speed.
"Ty, listen to me," Aaron said. "I need you to..."
Her instructions were lost in static. Les aimed his pistol at the bat-like creatures stalking them. The first group was 100 yards out. He could see their shriveled skin and frayed wings now, but it was their oscillating wails that chilled his blood. He fired a shot, and the gun kicked in his hand.
"Hold your fire!" Aaron shouted.
Too late, Jennifer's blaster sent a flare arcing through the darkness and lighting up the sky around them. As if in answer, lightning flashed. In the eerie light, Les saw the eyeless face of a siren, and the mouth full of jagged teeth as it unleashed a blood-curdling wail. It wheeled toward Ty, clawed hands reaching up for his boots. An instant later,
Ty opened a private channel between him and Les and looked up at Les.
Don't forget what I told you about Jordan. You're the only one who knows the truth now. You have to...
The first siren wrapped around Ty's body, engulfing him in its membranous wings. A second grabbed his legs, and a third slashed the deflating balloon. Thunder boomed, drowning out Aaron's anguished cry as she lost the second member of her team that day. The green hue of Les's optics flashed off as he broke through the floor of the cloud cover. The comms crackled offline, but the surviving members of Team Phoenix were forced to listen to Ty's screams as the sirens ripped his falling body apart.
19. Jordan splashed cold water on his face and slicked his dark hair back against his scalp. Wearing a freshly pressed uniform, polished boots, and his sword, he stepped into the hallway. An entourage of heavily armed militia waited, led by Ensign Del Toro.
"Ready, sir?"
Jordan answered by setting off down the dimly lit passage. Passengers were already flooding the corridors, the curfew having been lifted hours earlier. The crowds didn't concern him. He had soldiers with crossbows posted at every intersection, and the most experienced men carried pistols, with orders to use extreme prejudice to keep violence from breaking out. In the past, Jordan would have worried about a stray bullet puncturing a gas bladder, but right now he was more worried about a mutiny. So far, the show of force seemed to be working. Everywhere he walked, people fell silent and parted to make way. Lower deckers in their tattered clothing retreated, pressing their backs against the bulkheads. Jordan could smell them as he passed. Body odor, shine, and piss. The scents disgusted him. But at the next passage, several lower deckers stood their ground. At the head of the group stood Cole Mintel, muscular arms folded across his chest, sleeves rolled up to expose his clock tattoo. Del Toro reached for his baton, but Jordan shook his head.
"Is there a problem, Mintel?"
Their eyes met, but Roger's father looked away at first.
"It's not right," he muttered. "You can't..."
"In a few hours, everyone on this ship is going to be very happy," Jordan interrupted. "You'll all be praising my name. In the meantime, step aside." Cole watched him pass, and Jordan let him look. He wasn't going to waste his time on an old clockmaker. The soldiers closed in protectively around Jordan, and he began to relax as he walked, putting the anger and worry out of his mind. He was focused on his goal. He would find the new ship and save humanity. Nothing else, not even Katrina, was more important than that. By the time he got to the launch bay, a crowd had gathered outside the doors. The few people who managed to squeeze past the guards jostled for a view, pushing each other against the portholes.
"Should we push them back?" Lieutenant Hunt asked.
Jordan scrutinized the grubby faces pressed up against the glass, men and women, young and old. They were here to see which divers had made it back and what treasures they had found on the surface. According to the last radio transmission from Ola, the divers had come back with quite a haul. The launch bay doors screeched open, and Jordan stepped inside. Staff in red and yellow jumpsuits surrounded the two re-entry domes. A grappling hook had already pulled the plastic roof off the first, exposing two supply crates that had recently been scrubbed for contaminants. A team opened the crates and pulled out boxes marked with biohazard signs. Those contained the rare cancer drugs and other medicines that would heal dozens of otherwise doomed people. Still more boxes bore the symbol of a bread loaf, indicating synthetic food. A little boy wriggled past Jordan, his lower decker father right behind him. The child pointed through the window and asked,
"Papa, what's in those boxes?"
His father lifted the boy up to give him a better view.
"Medicine for Mama," he said.
He glanced at Jordan and added,
"Thank you, Captain."
The unexpected words of gratitude made Jordan pause. He couldn't remember the last time a lower decker had shown him any respect.
"You're welcome," Jordan said.
"Sir," Hunt called from inside the launch bay. "Shall I clear the passage outside?"
"No. I want them to see this."
Jordan continued into the room. He had lifted the shelter curfew so people could see the synthetic food, cancer drugs, and supplies being unloaded.
It was amazing how fast people forgot their grievances when their bellies were full and their loved ones were healed. The hiss of air filled the launch bay as he approached the dome in the center of the room. Sergeant Jenkins was waiting near the crowd of support staff. Through the fence of red and yellow jumpsuits, Jordan glimpsed four divers inside the re-entry zone. That was good. One accidental death and one problem dealt with. They were still hanging from the balloons that had pulled them into the air. A metal floor clanked shut, and one by one the divers dropped to the floor.
"There's only four," Jenkins said, his voice panicked. "What happened? Who's not here?"
"We must have lost another diver on re-entry," Hunt said. Jenkins elbowed his way through the crowd, pushing technicians and engineers aside to see whether his daughter had made it home. The sergeant's muscular body visibly relaxed when he learned that Aaron had returned. Jordan joined him to get a better look. White mist hissed into the re-entry tube, covering the divers inside. Technicians, Dr. Huff, several nurses, and other personnel crowded around the dome. Jordan made his way over to a burly bearded man.
"How are things here, Samson?" Jordan said.
The chief engineer wiped his mustache with his greasy fingers.
"Not good, Cap. We lost Ty."
"That's a shame," Jordan said, giving his best rueful frown. Pulling out a handkerchief, Samson dabbed his forehead. Jordan wasn't sure how anyone could be overweight aboard the airship, but Samson had somehow managed it. His jowls shook as he spoke.
"I don't know what he did to earn his time in the brig, but he was a damn fine technician."
He shook his head.
"We can't keep losing people that are impossible to replace, Cap."
"I know that."
Jordan held back the dressing down he wanted to give Samson in front of his engineering staff. The engineer disgusted him, but he would be vital when they took over the other airship.
"How much longer until they're done?" Jordan asked, gesturing towards the decontamination tube.
The mist continued swirling inside, shrouding the divers. Seconds later, jets fired, coating the ghostly figures in white foam.
"Depressurization is complete. Now we're sterilizing. Shouldn't be too long."
Samson shook his head.
"Can't believe we lost Ty."
Jordan pretended to share the chief engineer's regret. Ty had seen too much and guessed too many of Jordan's secrets. Now the problem was dealt with, and Jordan could relax a degree. Floor vents inside the dome clicked on, and white mist vented out of the ship. A second jet sprayed the divers with water, rinsing the foam off their armored bodies. Jordan found Jenkins again in the crowd. The sergeant moved from side to side to get a view of his daughter.
"She's okay," Jordan said, "and she did a fine job."
"Thank you, sir."
A team of techs carried the first of the cargo crates out of the room. Several militia soldiers armed with crossbows followed. Jordan could no longer hold back a smile. Team Phoenix had returned with an impressive haul for their first dive, and he had one man to thank for giving them the location. X was the gift that kept on giving. The thought soured his smile. At the portholes along the wall, dozens of lower deckers were still peering in, their grubby faces expectant, eyes on the crates.
"Not chanting about wanting a new captain now, are we?" Jordan muttered.
He wondered whether the teens who had defaced the bulkhead with his effigy were out there watching. It was only a matter of time before the militia found them, and when they did, he would make sure no one tried such a thing again. The lift clanked down over the dome. The technician controlling the device expertly pulled the plastic roof off the divers.
"Jenkins, have them meet me in the ops room after they finish decon," Jordan said.
He clapped Samson on the shoulder and walked away from the crowd, continuing to the operations room, where he unclipped his sword and placed it on the table. He glanced over at the pictures on the black bulkhead, stopping on X last. It had been a few days since the legendary diver haunted his dreams. Maybe that was because Jordan no longer feared the man. After losing his child and Katrina, the only thing he had left to lose was his command. And if the people wanted that, they would have to kill him. 15 minutes later, the door opened, and Jenkins walked inside. Aaron, Jennifer, Les, and Ola followed him in, their hair still wet from the showers.
"Welcome back, Team Phoenix," Jordan said.
He took the seat at the head of the table and motioned for them to sit. The door clicked shut,
and the sergeant stood in front of it, hands behind his back. He looked at his daughter, but she kept her sharp brown eyes on Jordan. She had performed well under pressure on the surface, it seemed. But he wondered how she had handled listening to Ty's death screams. After the botched sabotage of Magnolia's chute, he had been more meticulous with Ty's booster. Still, he would have preferred not to put Miss Jenkins through the emotional stress of losing another team member after the disaster that claimed her previous crew. The divers looked exhausted and horrified, especially Jennifer, who shivered and stared blankly ahead. Les Mitchell sat calmly, hands clasped on the table. Ola, pale and sweating, smiled proudly when Jordan looked at him.
"You have done well and should be proud of yourselves," Jordan finally said. "I'm here to congratulate you on one of the most successful dives in recent memory."
Erin fidgeted in her chair but didn't say a word.
"I'm sorry about Tom Price. I didn't know him well, but he seemed a good man. As for Ty, well, perhaps I made a mistake in sending him to the surface. Before we proceed, I need to ask you all a few questions about him."
Jordan scrutinized the diver's reactions. Mitchell's seemed agitated. He unlaced his fingers and picked at a nail. Jordan read the subtle clues in the man's expression, his movements. Even the slightest hesitation in a response would tell him when someone was lying.
"Did Ty say anything to any of you that could be considered treasonous?"
Jennifer, still shivering, managed to shake her head.
"I never talked to him. Cagey son of a bitch. Begging your pardon for my language."
"How about you, Commander?" Jordan asked.
"No, sir. He was quiet the entire dive, except when... well, except at the end."
"A tragedy," Jordan said. "I'm sure you did all you could."
"The only person he was alone with was Les," Erin added.
Jordan watched Les's Adam's apple bob in a dry swallow. He focused on the tall man.
"Anything you'd like to report, Les?"
"He asked me for a weapon when we heard the sirens," Les said. "And I'm sorry, but I gave him my blaster. I was scared, sir. I thought better to have us all armed if we were forced to fight."
"I approved it," Erin said. "That's on me." The ship groaned, distracting Jordan. He looked at his wristwatch. Right on time.
"Are we moving?" Jennifer whispered.
Jordan ignored her.
"Did Ty say anything else?"
"No, sir."
There was no hesitation, and Les didn't look away. Deep down, Jordan felt a flood of relief. He couldn't afford to kill Mitchells. The man was an engineer, and now a hell diver. Samson was right. They couldn't afford to lose people like that.
"Good," Jordan said. "Despite his history, Ty sacrificed himself for the good of everyone, as did Tom Price. For that, we honor them."
"We dive so humanity survives," the diver said quietly.
"And you will continue to do so. That's why I called you here. There's been an exciting development."
Jordan pushed his mic to his lips and said,
"Hunt, direct full power to the turbofans and rudders. Full speed toward deliverance."
"Roger that, Captain," came the response in his earpiece.
Jordan stood and clipped the sword back onto his belt, wanting to present an impressive image for his big announcement, after leaving the divers in suspense a moment longer.
"The reason we are changing course is confidential. It does not leave this room. Understood?"
4 immediate nods, and a 5th from Jenkins.
"I've been informed Commander Everhart and some members of Team Raptor survived at the Hilltop Bastion. Those traitors managed to find another airship, which they have commandeered."
Jennifer stopped shivering and sat up in her chair. Ola's brows scrunched together, and Les stopped picking at his fingernail. Erin was the only one who didn't react. Jenkins paced away from the door.
"We're going to find that ship," Jordan said. "I firmly believe that our future will continue to be in the sky for the next 2.5 centuries. This new ship will serve as backup in case something happens to the Hive. It will be imperative to our survival as a species."
"How do you expect to find her, sir?" Erin asked.
Jordan smiled. "I can't tell you that, but when I do find deliverance, you're going to help me take it from Team Raptor."
Silence filled the room. Jenkins scratched at the back of his neck and glanced at his daughter. She stared at Jordan with an unreadable expression on her face.
"I'll brief you when I know more," Jordan said. "Go see your families and get some sleep. You deserve it. Just don't mention what we discussed here." Dismissed.
Jordan held up his hand before Les could leave.
"Not you," he said.
The diver backed away from the door and turned to face him. Les was a foot taller, and Jordan had to tilt his head back slightly to meet his eyes.
"I sure hope you're telling me the truth about Ty," he said. "Because if you're not, I'm going to be very disappointed. Are you sure there's nothing else?"
Les hesitated a second, and then nodded.
"Don't forget that Trey is being held in the brig," Jordan said. "Not likely to forget that," Les said, then added a belated, "Sir."
Jordan regarded him for a long moment, trying to find the lie hidden behind the taller man's wary expression.
"That's all. Dismissed."
"Thank you, sir," Les replied. Jordan watched him leave. Les knew something, and he was going to find out exactly what it was. 1 year and 9 months earlier. Xavier brought his rifle up, the buttstock nestled in the sweet spot against his shoulder, and scanned the hallway of the underground ITC facility. After slaughtering the female sirens on the bridge, he had put another needle in his vein. The second dose coursed through him now, warm and intense. He could feel his pulse pounding in his neck, and his vision had narrowed as if he were seeing the world through a pair of binos. X was 10 floors below ground now, making his way toward the medical center, one of the most dangerous parts of any ITC facility. He had been in enough bunkers over the years to know the layout. The smooth concrete shells, narrow corridors, and massive warehouses all looked essentially the same, outside and inside. The medicine he sought was likely stashed next to the cryogenic chambers in the heart of the facility, where the sirens often returned for fresh meat. He stopped to rest on the next concrete landing, blinking to clear his vision. Sweat rolled down his forehead, and his throat burned. The cancer was eating him alive. It didn't seem any better than being torn apart by sirens. The monsters killed you quickly, at least. He started to move when he spotted slime on the stairs. He shined his helmet light on the glistening goo. The sirens had been here. Recently.
"Keep moving, X."
Cryogenics couldn't be much farther. He hoped the female sirens he had killed with his motorcycle were the only ones that lived in this facility. With luck, he could get in and out without another fight. But he also knew not to count on luck. X put his faith in bullets and medicine. A sound rose over his labored breathing. Somewhere high above him, a screech of metal echoed through the abandoned building. Or had it come from below? X paused on the steps to listen, then eased over to the steel door on the landing. It was unlocked, and he slowly pushed it open. The long hallway led to another door marked Communications. Inside were radio equipment and computers. Nothing of use to him. After closing the door, he waited another few minutes, then continued down the stairs. The cryogenics lab was 3 floors below. As he suspected, the door was wide open. The medical ward would be close, maybe even the next floor down. But first he had to pass the open doorway. He shut off his helmet light and left his NVGs off, for fear that the battery would attract the sirens. He took 2 very cautious blind steps. Once he knew he was past the open door, he stopped and reached out for the wall and used it to guide him across the next landing. Faint scratching came from the other side of the wall, like a child dragging fingernails down a bulkhead. Grunting followed. Animalistic. Almost sexual. X shivered, but not from fear. He was running a fever again. Whatever was on the other side of the wall was preoccupied for now, though he had no doubt it would happily slaughter him if it noticed his presence.
"Don't stop moving."
His fingers felt along the wall until he reached the edge of the stairs. As he slowly took a step down, his rifle scraped the wall.
The sounds shut off like a light switch, and silence filled the stairwell. He froze with his boot in midair. He closed his eyes and waited, heart pounding, blood singing in his ears, trying not to breathe audibly, trying not to move at all.